Hello, this is Rabbi Josh Uter with the third installment of the Utopia podcast. Today I have something particularly special. It is a lecture that I gave at my old synagogue, Mount Sinai Congregation, Washington Heights, on November 16th, 2009, the topic of which was the Halachot and Ethics of Universal Healthcare in Torah. This was a much bigger debate at the time before the healthcare bill passed, and was controversial enough that I was actually disinvited from giving this lecture at Uri Litzedek, the Jewish Social Justice Organization, because, as you're going to hear, I could not advocate support of any particular bill in the name of Torah. As explained, I believe at some point it should be intuitive, because since neither Republicans or Democrats are looking at, you know, Gemara, Rambam, and Shulchan Aruch when they write their bills, we shouldn't expect anything that goes before Congress to really encapsulate all of the Jewish ethics that are involved in an issue this complicated. So that's the only introduction I'm going to give myself here. Please enjoy the rest of it. There are source sheets that went along with this, which I haven't posted yet. I ideally would like to be able to write this up at some point. But if anyone would like the source sheets privately, please send me an email from the website. The shiur is reposted with permission of the people in charge of the program. So without further ado, here are the halachot and ethics of universal healthcare in Torah. Enjoy. Thank you very much for having me back here. Topic tonight is laws and ethics of universal healthcare in Torah. I'd like to introduce a bit by how I got into this to begin with. This past summer, I was on this conference call that President Obama solicited of rabbinic organizations to talk to, not just talk to rabbis, but to get them to speak about healthcare reform as part of their high holiday message. I mean, they solicited questions beforehand, and one of the two that actually got through was in something to the effect of, if you were addressing my congregation on the high holidays, what would you say? So it was that type of thing. He only spoke for 15 minutes or so, and I was thinking about what he was saying. Some things didn't, you know, sit right. I, you know, put up something on the web that got picked up, and then I started thinking a little bit more about, well, what exactly did I find, you know, troubling with what he was saying in terms of some of his policies and politics? And in turn, forgetting about President, you know, Obama, because politics is, you know, a separate issue, I started hearing, you know, a great deal from various Jews and Jewish organizations, the idea that we have a religious mandate to support not just healthcare reform, but the healthcare reform that's being proposed now dominantly by the Democratic Party. In particular, Elliot Dorf has written extensively on this. Rabbi Jill Jacobs wrote a book, And There Shall Be No Needy, has a chapter dedicated to, you know, healthcare reform. And of course, there was being on a phone call with, you know, almost 1,000 sycophantic rabbis who, you know, could just, you know, love to, you know, spread the message and spread the gospel of universal healthcare. And in general, when you have newer innovations and trying to apply halakha to newer innovations, they don't always sync up so well. And that's pretty much the point of what I want to discuss today about the laws and the ethics of universal healthcare in Torah. It's not a political type of shiur. I'm not really interested here of whether or not you like what the Democrats are doing or whether or not you really don't. If you come out of here, you know, with the exact same political position, that's fine. What I'm trying to do, or what I'd like to do today, is change at least the question from the religious perspective, that for those who think that there is a religious mandate to support these policies, that position I don't think is as easy to substantiate based on the sources. For, I would think, a fairly obvious premise, in that neither the Republican nor Democratic Party are from Jews. They're not looking to the Torah to say, here's how we're going to set up, you know, our healthcare plan. We could also argue that they probably shouldn't for church and state issues, but the reality is that they don't. And since they don't, we're going to find certain things that will be consistent and certain things that will be inconsistent. If you're looking at this from a pure dogmatic perspective, it's very easy to cherry pick out the one or two sources that, you know, would seem to be, well, you know, this is in the plan, this is in the Gemara, so therefore we must support it. But of course, the Gemara is really, really big and says a lot of different things. And especially, you know, when you have a very comprehensive legal system, there are checks and balances throughout halacha, which have, I think, their own internal ethic. So again, if you want to support either side, you know, go right ahead. What I would like to do, at least show how from the Jewish perspective, to say that you ought to or ought not to is a little bit more complicated based on, you know, various issues, you know, that we're going to see today. When we talk about healthcare reform, I found that there are two categories that often get confused. And one of the big problems I think we have in today's political dialogue is no one bothers having a real conversation and like points, counterpoints, and arguments. You throw out, countless sound bites, whether or not they actually are connected. There are two types of areas I'd like to address here. The first section of, you know, that you'll find with healthcare reform involves communal coverage, in that having your medical expenses in some ways, you know, covered or accounted for by an external party who isn't you. And in part number two, we're going to discuss some of the issues pertaining to the high costs of healthcare. You know, which is definitely important to healthcare reform, but it's not the same as coverage. I mean, some people could even argue that, you know, you expand coverage, costs are going to go up. You know, that's a, you know, argument for economists, one of which I am not, but at least we're going to, for today, treat them as two separate areas to look at. A word on the translations here. Most of the English translations are from Cincino because I could copy and paste them, so I apologize for awkwardness and any typos. So let's start with the very beginning of, you know, communal coverage, Section A of Obligations and Mandates. Would people, you know, like to read around the room? Hello, sure. Take number one.
English, Hebrew.
Do the Hebrew, and if you do the Hebrew, provide a translation. If you've got a better one than what's on the side, please use that.
Kol ir she'ein ba'asarat zarim halalu in tamid chacham rashai ladur p'tocha. So any city that doesn't have the following 10 things in it, it's not appropriate for a Talmud Chacham or scholar to live in that city. Beit Din, Makin Ve'onshin, a Beit Din which can hit people or whip people, I guess, and punish people, or flagellate people, which is an excellent translation. The Kupa Shel Tzedakah, Nagid B'Shnayim, Umid Lekapu Shlosha, and a charity fund, which is collected by two people and distributed by three, Ubeit HaKnesset and a shul, Ubeit HaMerchatz and bathhouses, Ubeit HaKisei, and I guess it'll be translated as restroom, but I assume it would mean like an outdoor pit area?
Or a public bathhouse, something like that. Or if it was, I think it's just an outhouse would be a bit
okay,
like,
now,
you know, different than Merchatz.
A rofe, a doctor, a uman, a lavla, a tavla, the Tavach Umlamet Tinoko, and the professionals, and Tavach would mean a shochet in this case. It doesn't mean the slaughter, presumably means a ritual slaughterer, and someone who teaches children.
Right. So, you know, I underlined, you know, the operative words here. This is Gemara and Sanhedrin Yitzayin Amud Bet, that it's kol ir, you need, it's a city, and two, and one of the things that, you know, you're supposed to have there is a rofe. What this does is, one, is it defines our, you know, I guess, civic boundaries as whatever you define as a city. We haven't gotten to something bigger like a medina, some little bit more of a localized area. And one of the requirements that the city ought to have is a rofe. Right off the bat, it mentions the rofe in the context of other institutions that we would consider to be communal institutions. Should seem to indicate that it's not just a private practice, but like a rofe, a doctor that serves the entire community. And that would be sort of the role that the doctor would have. In source number two, Shulchan Aruch Yerideya 24917, Yesh Misha Omer, in brackets, he was referring to the Tashbetz Katan, Shemitzvah Beit HaKnesset Adifah Mimitzvah Tzedakah, Mitzvah Tzedakah Lena'arim Lomot Torah, O Lecholim Aniyim, Adifah Mimitzvah Beit HaKnesset. That there are those who say that the commandment to build a synagogue supersedes the commandment of charity, and to teach young children or to heal poor sick people will even supersede the commandment to build a synagogue. So following this passage, I'm showing you, just laying the groundwork here. Following this, at least, the institution of a rofe, of a medical professional to serve the health needs of a community, is actually, according to one opinion at least, more important from the institutional hierarchy than even having a shul. Okay? So, you know, those, I think, you know, from a communal level can already start setting up, you know, that we have this institution of medical professional for a community. Source number three, Rambam from Hilchot Rotzeh Bishmirat HaNefesh, gives us the individual commandment, not just on a community level to have a doctor, but what role do we have as individuals to take care of the health needs of other people? Javier? And so here, the operative thing here that I underlined in the English, this is Bavrotzeh 114, that if you have the ability to save someone, even if it includes paying someone to save someone, you have to do it for lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. Right? This is something that, you know, and we'll get to, you know, qualifications in, you know, section two, again, trying to lay the groundwork that it's not just, you know, you have a doctor, but we also have a mitzvah to save people's lives. And if we can't save people's lives directly, sometimes it means paying someone else to save their lives if you have the means to do so. And we're talking about, you know, what does it mean to save a life? We're including source 4, Rambam Hilchot Avelut, Hilchot Avel, I should say, 4-5, Cholam Ametz Eina Im Yitziat HaNefesh, Harei Zeh Shofech Davmim, that if you have someone in the category of a goses who's on the deathbed, and you do something to him to that would actually make his life depart a little bit earlier, we're considering you as if you are a murderer. The point being that we take every instant of life seriously. That if you make someone's life shorter, certainly directly, even if the guy's already on his deathbed, we consider that on par with murder. So, you know, these are the types of sources that, you know, you will find people who will use as, well, based on this, you know, we ought to have, you know, some form of universal health care that's communally based, communally supported. Of course, you know, the devil is going to be in the details of how such a system is going to work. It's a little bit difficult to, you know, even use what we have today as an example because, you know, we've got a 2,000-some-odd page bill of legalese floating around in various amendments. So, you know, when we discuss these here, I'd like to discuss, you know, not only the specific halachot, but also the ethics behind them that we're not really going to ever see coming out of our government. Yeah. We're going to address a bit of that in section two in terms of, you know, limitations and qualifications, where we're, you know, we're going to set up. I'll grant you is very, you know, big, vague, and nonspecific. And don't forget that, you know, the system that we have for healthcare today they didn't have back then. So a lot of stuff is really not going to be analogous. And we're going to show where you're going to have some very, I would say, important deviations between the medicine that they had then, the medicine that they had today. You know, I mean, they didn't have MRIs, you know, so you say, you know, should it cover MRIs or not? But, you know, I wanted to at least first set up that from the first couple of sources, health seems to be more of a general communal issue. There's also an individual mandate to save people's lives. That's, you know, pretty much what I wanted to have for section one, which I admit is, you know, completely vague. I mean, halacha can sometimes be vague, but it's also an introduction to when we actually get to some of the details in halacha of what would, you know, sort of a Torah based on, you know, mostly rabbinic Judaism, what would this sort of health system look like in practice with some of those details? And also, I should point out that, you know, this is not going to be fully comprehensive. You know, it can't be. This is only one class, and for most of these topics, you could probably spend a lot more time. Again, the point here that I'm trying to show is the idea of universal healthcare from a Jewish perspective is not really going to be that simple, especially when you apply it to a modern-day political arena, because things are not going to line up so easily. And I would say that they're very important details that aren't going to line up.
I guess, just sorry to break up your...
No, sure.
My point is this, that to call something communal implies that there is a shared... for each other's health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily see that from the sources. It's communal in the sense that if I come to a city, there should be a doctor there, or I shouldn't live there. That's not so communal, because the communal just has this implication that things are, I give a little of myself in order for another person to benefit.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing sort of, I mean, here communal is just like I should be in that, like communal in the word community,
mm-hmm.
sort of.
So we made, yeah.
I'm sorry to jump in, but number two does seem to go that way. Like, there's a communal obligation to build a shul, but before you build a shul, there's a communal obligation to take care of the sick and the... So it does seem that there is some kind of communal obligation. At least from two, I'll grant you one.
That worked. Okay. Thank you. So when you're talking about limitations and qualifications, one of the things that I know that's come up in the modern day healthcare debate is what about personal responsibility? Like if a guy smokes for 50 years, should I pay for a lung transplant and things of that nature? So believe it or not, we actually have something like this addressed in halacha. In source number 5 here, Shmot 21:19. Is, I think, one of the only sources where you actually have a mandate to actually heal someone. This is a case of injury. Whereas if you hit someone, you have to pay for their medical bills. Right? Seems reasonable, rational. The Pasuk says, Im yakum vitalech bachuta mishanato v'nikam makah, rak shivto yitein rapo yirapeh. The one who struck the blow will not be held responsible if the other gets up and walks around outside with his staff. However, he must pay the injured man for the loss of his time and see that he's completely healed. In Jewish damages, interpersonal damages, there are 5 categories of damage. One of them being is ripui, which refers to the medical bills. In Gemara Bava Kama 85a, yes, you want to take that one? Number 6.
I'll just do it in English. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay. Master stated.
Actually, I want to just do the underlined part. You can read the others about the medical thing. Then. Yeah.
Okay, if the injured person disobeyed his medical advice, okay, and he ate the honey and some sort of sweet things, then skipping to the next.
Meaning, if you caused an injury to someone, they went to the doctor, you paid the doctor money, and the doctor told him to do something, the guy didn't do what the doctor said, or disobeyed the orders, and his injury got worse. Continue.
It might have been said that the offender should still be liable to continue to heal him. The rule to rule this idea out, it says only.
Right, so the Pasuk says rak, which is one of these exclusive type of terms, and the Gemara gives a list of the things that rak comes to exclude. So in this Gemara, you have someone who you are normally biblically obligated to pay for his medical bills. He says, I'm not going to listen to the doctor, and you have, even with a biblical verse that says you're supposed to heal him, you have an explicit rabbinic exemption that says, you know what? He doesn't follow the doctor bills, you're gone. Like, you can do it once, he doesn't listen, you're off the hook. And here, note that there's also no appeal to the community. Well, no one else is checking in. It's almost like a kal vachomer. If the guy who has a biblical obligation to heal a guy who's, normally, but he doesn't, and that biblical obligation goes away when the guy doesn't listen to the doctor, you can almost say kal vachomer, that burden ought not be obligatory on the rest of the community. Sure, if people want to pay for it, I mean, there's nothing preventing them from doing so. But to say that you've got a halachic obligation in such a case, based on this Gemara, to me, seems to be a bit of a stretch. And number 7, Ken, please read Rambam Tzitzchovel Masik 2:19. Also explicit lehalacha, please just read the Hebrew or English, either one.
If the injured party ignores medical advice and the injured person's health worsens, the offender does not have to pay.
All right, so actually even cited lehalacha by the Rambam and also Shulchan Aruch, which most of the sources here are going to be Gemara, Rambam, or Shulchan Aruch. I'm just narrowing down my canon, just otherwise get to... Rishonim and Moshe Elik Tshuva, we'd never be done here. So at least, so source number 1 that we have is one of the qualifications and limitations for, a universal type healthcare, could very well be just plain old personal responsibility. And let's not forget that taking care of your physical self in Judaism is intrinsically part of Torah. In either Mishum Ushmar Temet Nasho Techem, you're supposed to take care of yourself. There's a Gemara in the 3rd chapter of Kiddushin that discusses, certain types of death are from God and certain types of death are man-made. One of the types of death that it concludes are man-made are things that involve hot and cold, meaning if, you decide to go outside in a monsoon in short sleeves without a jacket, you get cold and eventually get pneumonia and die. That's not really God's fault. That's, you being stupid. And it's a consideration, I think, that comes out of here that I think does have a ramification within the halachic system of what, you know, we might call a universal type of healthcare. Because, again, universal is a very vague, broad term, you know, doesn't really have limits. Here, you seem to say, we're going to give you a bit of an exemption here. The other issue, you know, that you can have with a modern-day medical care, universal medical care that's really been discussed, is the issue of how do you allocate limited resources. We don't have an infinite number of doctors to treat everyone. We don't have an infinite amount of money to pay doctors to treat everyone. Not to say that, you know, it's a commodity, but, you know, it's also not something that medical care is not something that we have an endless supply of. And the sad reality is, you know, some people can afford health care and some people can't afford health care. And sometimes you try to do too much to help someone else out, you logically are going to have to take something away from someone else. Frederick, could you please read source number 8? This is a Gemara in Bava Metzia 62a. That got to something that I think many of us might be familiar with.
Oh,
okay.
This one.
Yeah.
That's
okay. Look, these are all Gemaras, and technically they're all old chestnuts. You know, they've been around for a while.
But
please.
If two are traveling on a journey far from civilization, and one has a pitcher of water, if both drink, they will both die. But if one only one drinks, he can reach civilization. The son of Keturah, who some say is Yashka, taught it is better that both should drink and die, rather than that one should behold his companion dead. Until Rabbi Akiva came and taught that your brother may live with you, your life takes precedence over his life. Of course, he might say the same thing if he owned the water.
Exactly the point. But, you know, to recap, this is a story I think, you know, some of us might be familiar with. Two guys are in a desert. There's only enough water to, you know, for one person to survive, right? Either both of them split the water and they both die, or one person takes all the water and lives. Whoever has the water lives. Now, we can say, well, why is this, you know, could this be just? I mean, why is it just that the person who happens to be fortunate enough to have the resources gets to live and the one who doesn't gets to die? Which, you know, is a difficult question in its own right, but we don't expect someone to give up their own health and put their own health at risk to save someone else. Now, does that, I don't want to say that this implies that whatever healthcare gets passed, that necessarily is going to happen. So please don't jump on me on that point. I'm just throwing it out there as a plausible effect of, I guess, certain programs, depending on how your details are worked out. Yeah.
Also, there's a big bias in Western thinking, based, I suppose, on Christianity, that doctors have an obligation to go into dangerous situations to help.
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on the sheets here. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to the side of the doctors here. But at least on the side of the individual, right, given that you have limited resources, right, if you are now obligated to pay for other people's health care, if you're, let's say, you know, in the lower middle class area, like really on the border, right, and now all of a sudden you've got to incur a greater cost to the point where it's going to affect your long-term health. Maybe you're not going to be able to eat as well. Maybe you're not going to be able to, I don't know, go to the gym or pay for, you know, exercise equipment that you otherwise could to keep yourself better. I mean, here, I mean, this is a clear-cut life and death case here. I mean, this is a bit of an absolute. But essentially, you do not say that, well, in the interest of making sure everyone is equal, we're going to have one person give up his life just to save someone else so they should be equal. That as, you know, random or capricious it might seem, someone who actually has the resources to heal themselves should heal themselves. And if someone doesn't, yeah, never. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I can say with relative certainty that, you know, even everyone in this room is going to die at, you know, some point. And it's just something that, you know, them's the breaks. You know, it's not, you know, one of the more pleasant things to think about, but at least, you know, again, it's in the Gemara, and, you know, I think it's something which, you know, if you're talking about Judaism on the, you know, broader sense, you have something to take seriously. You have a similar line about, you know, when you're talking about, you know, providing healthcare for other people, you know, it means someone is giving up something of themselves to help someone else. Another source I want to get the point across that, you know, we don't value or we can't value one life at the expense of another. You can argue that our current system does that very thing, but you shouldn't do it in any case. Do anyone, Mike? Want to read number? Can you read number 9? This is Gemara Sanhedrin 74a. Alright, so this is a case here of why one of the three Yehareg Va'al Ya'avor, one of the three laws that you're supposed to be killed as opposed to doing is murder, or you shouldn't say do, I mean not do, is murder, meaning if someone holds a gun to your head and says, kill that person or I kill you, you have to let yourself be killed. Why? Because who's to say, who are you to make the judgment, rather, that your life is any more important than someone else? Yeah?
Except you are allowed, you're specifically told to do that.
The case of the water, I think, that you're referring to is not an issue of proactively. It's an issue of whom do you save.
Okay.
That's a case of a priority of triage. And you're in the process of saving. You're trying to save a life. But given that you're going to only save one out of two lives, here's a criteria for how to do it.
But you are saying that your blood is redder than his. And you say, I have the right to keep my water because my blood is redder than his.
I think there's a difference between, you know, actively trying to save someone and passively letting someone go versus actively trying to kill someone. When you're talking about forcibly taking money from one person and giving it to someone else, you know, that's a little bit more of a proactive, well, exactly. I mean, you're talking about that type of, you know, taxation or under the threat of imprisonment, which has been floated around. You know, so that's really forcing people to do stuff as opposed to, you know, you're actually taking away from something. When, you know, someone is drowning and you need to save them, they're drowning anyway. You didn't put them in that situation. So, I mean, I do see it in terms of, you know, we do in a way prioritize, but it's different in terms of, you know, do you, it, I think that's more an issue of like saving as opposed to actively, you know, choosing one over the other. That's number, you know, so that's section number 2 that, you know, we have in Torah. Talking about, you know, what I think is very relevant to healthcare, an understanding idea of, you know, we do have limited resources. It's not up to us to say we're going to help out this person at the expense of someone else, or at least we're not going to save someone's life at the expense of someone else's life, or at least not at the direct expense of someone else's life. Another interesting thing that I found is based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin 74a. Rava said, Rodef Shaya Rodef Achar Favero Vishiver Tekelim, that if a guy is chasing someone else, this is a case of, I believe, a Goel Adam, where, there's a Rodef. A guy's about to chase someone, and you're chasing him because, you know, you're allowed to kill a Rodef who's about to kill someone else. Vishiver Tekelim, and he breaks the vessels. Bain Shel Nirdaf Ubain Shel Kol Adam Patur. If it is for the person who is being chased or for any other person, you are exempt from praying. Because once the guy is a rodef, then, you know, he's, you know, liable for death at that point. And you're not going to say, well, we're going to let you kill him, but you're going to have to pay back damages. It seems a bit out of whack on our moral scale. Then your dash shishibera tekelim, but the person who's being chased who breaks the kelim, shall rodef patur, if it is of the one who is doing the chasing, he is exempt, shall call adam chayav, but if it is for the, if it's the kelim, it's the utensils for any other person, he's obligated. Rambam explains this lahalacha in Chovel Umazik 8.13, shehamatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveiro chayav, that if you save yourself with the money of your friend, you're obligated to pay it back. I cited here the language of the Rush because it's used in the Beit Yosef and the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam in, I believe, Hilchot Rotzeach in source number 3, that the person who is saved has to pay back to the whoever saved him whatever was taken out. Because a person is only obligated, or should, well, forgetting the double negatives here, but a person's only obligated to save the life of his friend with his money, when there is money that he can get, when he can get reimbursed for it. There's no halachayr, when he has, well, I should say put this, it's like when the life of his friend, unless he has the money with which to save him. Now, if you're talking about something like, you know, a healthcare system where you're forcing you to pay for someone else on a communal level, then, you know, following, you know, these sources here would seem it doesn't really help. It's like other people are paying for you, but if, I mean, money's coming from somewhere, right? There's no magic money fairy. So if someone's paying for it, it's going to be in the form of, you know, taxation. So if you're going to say, well, we're going to take your money and use it to save someone else's life, well, If you really want to follow a strict halachic system, then the guy would eventually have to pay you back for it. Yeah.
However, if you set the thing up as a general insurance system, where there's a pool that everybody pays into,
right,
and everybody has the potential to get some benefit out of it, so then it's not quite the same thing as taking your money.
So to my knowledge, Chazal didn't have insurance set up. I mean, you might even be able to say, and we'll get to it with certain things about how the core reserve, that maybe kind of sort of, I, you know, in terms of the pool thing, it might make things different in terms of, you know, because you really are just pooling risk. But then, you know, there are matters of choice, and, you know, then we get into a whole bunch of, you know, economic mathematical formulas that give me headaches thinking about. And all that good stuff. But my point being, here at least, is, you know, when you're, you know, on the basic level, it's, you know, taking out, you know, insurance for a second, we're just looking about coverage. Right? I didn't use the term insurance for that reason. I used the term covering other people's medical bills. Right? This, you know, straight halacha here doesn't really solve that problem. Because, you know, yeah, you can say I can, you know, lay out, you know, the poor person, you know, is still going to get stuck with a whole lot of, you know, medical bills. You know, because, you know, this is stuff that the guy's going to have to pay. And we're going to get to that in source number 13 in a second. Yeah.
So just to clarify, you're only obligated to save somebody who will eventually be able to pay back.
Well, in this case, or at least through money. I mean, it's a difference between doing it through money and through not. I mean, Maimonides said through money, the rush, and it seemed that the Beit Yosef, from what I saw, seems to follow it, thinks, well, no, if you have to do it by money, you know, look at it this way. I mean, and this gets very important to number 13 here. You know, this is, I guess, you know, read this in the awkward English here, but this is a metaphor for basically why it's better to live beneath your means and not go into debt, then live better and do go into debt. Mm-hmm. That's the analogy here in, you know, really plain English. It's Gemara Psachim 114a. I think it's, you know, really relevant for today, but it very well goes into our other discussion of, if you're talking about, you know, a universal type of healthcare, you know, or some even pull risk, should you go into debt for this? Or, I mean, according to the rabbinic ethic, going into debt, and especially with everything that the Torah talks about how evil neshech, and, you know, rebate, you know, interest, usury are, right? It seems going into debt is a really bad thing. And I know of no place that says, we're going to make you go into debt to save someone's life. Which, you know, today has really practical implications. I checked today, the, you know, our debt. Anyone want to take a guess how big it is?
Oh, it's $10
trillion.
Closer to 12,
yeah,
from what I saw. And, like, the personal liabilities that taxpayers have, not just all people, taxpayers, is something like $100,000 a taxpayer. Like, towards the national debt. Some obscene.
That's including all seven kids in the family system.
Right. So, it depends on, from what I saw, it depends on which website you see. Like, I saw it anywhere between, like, $11 and $12 trillion. This is an obscene amount of money. Now, would you also then say, like, for other ethical reasons, that you have to get further? I mean, we're already in just an absurd amount of hock, you know, individually and as a country, you know, to start digging further into debt, especially when you, like, if you're talking about saving a life, it's one thing. But let's not forget that, you know, some of the plans being discussed involve, you know, preventative medicine, of which you've also got, you know, significant debate on both sides. You know, is this going to save money? Some say it's going to cost more, et cetera, and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
I'm just not sure of the extent to which Source 12, or, I mean, also Source 11, but especially Source 12 relates. Is that saying that you have to sell everything you own to get down to zero, but you don't have to go into negative numbers? Is that basically saying that, you know, Bill Gates needs to save almost everybody in America, but everybody else is more or less off the hook? Like, what's it saying?
In terms of Bill Gates needs to save everyone else in America, but I think it's, you know, the flip way in terms of, you know, if Bill Gates, you know, spends money to save my life, unless he, you know, decides to waive it and give it as charity, I, you know, would otherwise have to pay him back for
it.
Oh, I see. Meaning how much? If you're expecting your money back, right? So then it doesn't matter as much.
Right. So there's a difference between not being able to buy food and not being able to buy a new car every year.
Yeah, I think that would. You know,
so I think
that
comes to the question. Like,
right. The question is to what extent? Because if the government is going around saying that you need to do it, this is a sort of a weird issue because obviously you didn't know what to do with presumably Trump almost all of these sources.
Yeah.
It would be a different issue.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, if they do pass it, it's usher to do so. It's, you know, just more,
right,
you know.
Right, I understand. So the question right, sort of just becomes this. It's like, so if there's somebody who's drowning and there's a swimming instructor there, and he's like, well, I'm not going to save him unless, you know, you pay me $2,000. And I'm like, well, it's either the rent check or saving this guy's life. I'm not going to go in debt, but it's going to be, you know, or, you know.
We're going to address that a little bit in, you know, we're up to now in section 2 on page 4, addressing the issues of the cost of healthcare, which I think, you know, we might get to, you know, we might answer the question in that way.
Okay.
because you're asking like how much, you know, we might, if we don't yell at me at the end. Or don't yell, just raise your hand. Remind me.
We also have a difference between people who have diseases like cancer where we don't know where it came from and people who have diseases like they didn't take care of themselves and we know why they're sick and people who, it's their fault presumably, so then we don't care about.
Yeah.
As far as the health care.
I haven't seen, you know, such a, in terms of, medically, you know, I don't know in terms of, you know, what was an explicit cause or not. What I did see here was, like, you explicitly don't listen to doctor's orders. Unfortunately, I'm sure we all know people who did everything their doctor said and, you know, get worse. You know, and there are also people, you know, who smoke and never get cancer.
I mean, a lot of these things happen, but a lot of causes these days are known sexually transmitted diseases are quite preventable. For example, smoking leads to lung cancer and everybody knows it.
There's even more direct causes. I mean, there are idiots in the world. Like, I know of a case where a guy got drunk, went diving, hit his head on the bottom of the pool, and broke his neck, and then got drunk again, and still didn't go to the hospital for, like, 3 days, and then I had to come in for an emergency. So,
is he a paraplegic now, or
no?
Shomer Pitaim Hashem. God saves up
the world. The point is, like, you know, there is a very clear example of you don't have to go to, you know,
So what I wanted to get across, at least in this first section, that if you're going to view healthcare reform from the perspective of, you know, pure coverage, you know, the system that's set up in the time of Chazal based on Torah, you know, doesn't really fit into any system that you're going to find today. And again, understandably so. Right? And the ethics that go on behind it, I think you do see come out in a bit of the discussions that have already predated in terms of a need to concern for your fellow man, an ethic to try to save someone's life. On the other hand, you still have with it, right, not as an exception, but additional information there of a mandate for personal responsibility, for helping someone else out, but not at a risk to yourself. These are all important qualifications that you have in the, I think, the you know, Torah's notion of covering someone's healthcare costs.
Wouldn't there be sources that are a little bit more apropos dealing with, I know there's issues that they're dealing with, if the town sets up a kupas daga and then everybody's obligated to contribute to it, and the person says, I don't want to contribute to it, can they be, I guess, flagellated into... into paying for it? I believe this wants to say yes.
Right, so...
Doesn't that seem more like what's going on here?
If you're setting up a tax purpose, I mean, yes, if you view from a, say, like, tzedakah, from what Hillel's referring to is, like, if you are allowed to set up a, you know, gabbai tzedakah, a town tax collector for charity, who can actually force people to give money for things. You know, however, in terms of, you know, what they can give, if they ask you to give more money that it puts your life at risk, right?
But presumably what we're talking about here is not something that, you know, puts people's lives at risk.
So if you're talking about, like, the civic system by means of, you know, enforcing compliance, you know, with a particular law, then, I mean, yeah.
Right. So the question is, so since there's agreement that once that system is set up, so taking it one step back, so let's say the Gabbai Tzedakah comes to the town meeting and says, I propose a system wherein everybody is obligated to give a certain amount of tzedakah in order to heal the aniyim.
Yeah.
And if anybody refuses to give it, then I should be able to get the...
So in theory, then, you would have to, but mishum the laws of tzedakah, or mishum the laws of the gabbai tzedakah, that sort of, like, social type thing.
Right, exactly. So the question is, if the gabbai tzedakah comes in and proposes that, is there a halachic requirement to support that? Or can you just make up your own mind, and there's no halachic...
I would have to double-check the laws regarding, you know, the extent of authority that a gabbai tzedakah has. I would think it would depend, you know, community by community, just how much authority of coercion they have of control over their
own
money.
Well, that would be the subjective.
Well,
in terms of the halacha behind that, though, is less about healthcare and more about, you know, social.
Wait, take that out of the equation. Okay. Take the forcing part out of the equation. The question is, if there's a god that cycles, says, I'm proposing a system wherein everybody has to contribute in order to pay for saving the aniyim, is there a halachic obligation to support that system that would be on the entire community?
My intuition is yes. I'd have to double check to confirm. Well, we're going to get to that. Well, in section two here, we're actually going to see, like, also a greater degree, just how much of a change that we have. So let's see now. Scott, take number 14.
Bar Anna said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Yehuda, Bar Rav, Eli, Onions, and Dwell in the
number 14 on page 4. It's Gemara Brachot 60a.
On going into the blood letter, one should say, may it be my fellow Lord, my God, that this operation may be a cure for me, and may you heal me, for you are a faithful healing God. Your healing is sure, since men have no power to heal, but this is the hazard. Why is it a man should not speak about this, since it was taught in the house of Rabbi Yishmael? It is written, he shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. From this we learn that permission has been given to the physician to heal. When he gets up, what does he say?
I forgot about the cupping thing. The cupping is how Cincino translates bloodletting.
Okay.
That's, if I missed a correction, that's what it means. Yeah. So this Gemara addresses, you know, what might consider a very firm, you know, Christian scientist type of answer of, you know, like, why should we ever heal someone? Because if, you know, all afflictions come from God, you know, what are you doing? So it's all in God's hand anyway, and we're only doing this, as he put it, because it's a minhag. You know, we're just accustomed to do so. And Rabbi Akiva says, Abaye says, no, don't say this. You know, it says, rapo yirape, right? You're supposed to heal someone. So Rav Acha, you know, puts in a little, you know, different thing of baruch rofei chinam. So rather than want to say a blessing, bless, yeah, I mean, yes, yeah, I mean, you know, God's, you know, part of the healing process, but more importantly, God's free. I mean, if you don't count, you know, the whole burden of, like, doing mitzvot and stuff like that, but aside from that, he doesn't, you know, charge you money, or aside from tzedakah for that matter, whatever. Point is, you don't pay directly for medical care from God, that I know of, at least.
Isn't it a dig at the physician?
Oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to get to, oh, you want digs, we're going to get to digs a little bit later. You know, digs against medical professionals. Yeah, don't you worry.
We're IMing about this earlier today, but I mean, medicine in the time of Chazal was largely placebo. It really isn't the same situation today.
We'll get to that in section 2 when it talks about managing the costs. But in terms of, you know, the justification about, you know, how could you even pay a doctor? Right, because, you know, if God's doing all the healing, you're just doing a wish act. So the Gemara says, like, no, doctors really, you know. You still have to take doctors seriously as doctors. And from the responses, like, yes, you have to, you know, still pay doctors. From the Gemara in Ketubot 52b, I'll do this quickly outside, is that there was even a discussion, this might even go something similar to what Javi was saying earlier, of a difference between an illness, Yitzla Kitzva, and She'enla Kitzva, in terms of different ways of paying for different types of ailments, meaning whether or not you would call a, you know, a one type of thing, or what you might call in today's vernacular, a chronic condition, which would be an illness in la kitzva. So, for example, if your married husband has to, you know, pay for the health care costs of his wife. So it says here, well, from where does he pay it? If it's in, when, like, if she has a cold or something, then according to Rishon Ben Gamliel here, then that money can be deducted from the ketubah. But if she has a chronic condition and she needs medicine to keep living, then he has to pay for it. Out of his own pocket, I think, as Rashi explains, because it's closer to mizonot. It's closer to the basic sustenance. One of the obligations that a husband has to a wife is to say, you know, give her food and to support her. She has a chronic condition, then he is halachically obligated to pay for that regular, you know, chronic condition out of his own pocket, not out of the ketubah, not out of the marriage arrangement that they had when they got married. And Rav Yochanan even threw in here the possibility that if she does have a chronic condition, you could even negotiate with the doctor for a flat fee, you know, in terms of certain type of negotiation that you could have that might, you know, either lower costs over time or come to some other arrangement. So these types of things illustrate that there was kind of, you know, you do pay doctors. In terms of, you know, we mentioned all the way at the beginning about the position, medical position, as having a communal position here. In the next two sources, 16-17, sort of analogous as not just a doctor, but a doctor isn't, you know, just, you know, you go to med school, but you're also functioning in a way as a communal agent of a Beit Din. It's a communal agent of the court. Ezra, could you take 16 and 17? 16 is a Mishnah in Bechoros on page 4-6. Right, so if you, sorry.
If you take sure. money to judge, then your judgment, your rulings are null and void.
Right, so if I'm a judge and you're saying, I want you to adjudicate this case for me, and because of your judgment, I'll pay you $20, whatever I say isn't going to, you know, that's not a real judgment. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch makes an interesting distinction in terms of how you pay doctors. This is Yeridea 3362. Yeah.
Rofei Asr Litzol Schar HaChachma V'Halimud, Abba Schar HaTorah V'Abba Tala HaMutar.
That's
the fact that he is doing this job instead of doing...
Scarbatella, I use opportunity because that's my translation. I think it's the best, you know, way of doing it. You know, and you find this for a lot of religious agents, that you don't pay them for the actions that they do, the direct actions. You pay them indirectly. You know, like Scarbatella, for the opportunity cost that you say you could do, you should be doing other things. It's the justification, you know, for why we pay rabbis. I mean, we're kind of makel on that level, but, you know, it's why we pay rabbis. And it's how, you know, other types of communal issues. So in this case, we treat the, you know, the doctor isn't just, you know, a medical professional, but also a medical professional under the aegis of Beit Din. And we're going to see this a little bit later, too.
So I'm not following the corollary between a judge and a doctor. In,
mm-hmm.
words, like, in theory, the judge's opinion might be swayed by his feelings of getting money from somebody. Why would the doctor be swayed by, you know, like, in other words, I think I have a heart condition. Will you give me $20? Oh, it's not a heart condition.
The concern isn't corruption. The concern is more of what is its role and what does it mean to be a doctor. And it's more theological, because when you're a doctor, I mean, don't forget, you're doing mitzvot. You're saving people's lives. And you don't want to get paid for doing mitzvot. Just like, you know.
Paid for teaching Torah?
Well, you're not supposed to get paid for teaching Torah. It's really for the Scarbatella. It's really for, you know, the other actions that you're, you know, doing, you know, the opportunity cost that you could have been doing something else. That's how you should have, you know, been. That technically is how you're getting paid.
How can you get paid for Torah?
Torah, sorry.
But the Torah that you're doing is the mitzvah.
Yeah, so we're actually going to get to a couple of other sources in one of the other sections. We're going to see where the Shulchan Aruch kind of contradicts himself on this point. Yeah. Well, you could say a consultation is Scarbatella. Like, when you ask me a question, I have to stop whatever I'm doing. I have to, you know, listen to you. I have to think about what you're saying and do a mental process and think about it. Now, I mean, normally, you know, this happens instantaneously. But, you know, you can also say, well, you know, I'm giving you my time when I'm doing it. And, you know, there's a running joke with lawyers, you know, that you have a legal conversation, you ask a lawyer a legal question at a party, you get a bill 2 days later. You know, it's, I don't know.
What's the joke?
Well, I mean, the joke being they tend to charge for, you know, even bits and, you know, small piece of information. Whereas if you ask, like, a techie, you know, like, how do I fix my computer, most are willing to do it for free. Most are, or at least I have, in which case
can
I'm just...
phone number?
Then maybe I'm just a sucker.
It depends on how involved the fix is.
So anyway, so section, you know, 2A, we have a justification for healthcare costs, you know, in terms of paying for doctors, which, although we ought to take it face value, know that, you know, the Gemara and the healthcare system just deal with it. Section B is, well, it's fine. So you pay a doctor, but what about managing the costs? I mean, after all, that's one of the big questions that we have today. If you go through a hospital bill and you say, well, here's how much we're charging you for services rendered, you can ask really legitimate questions of why was this worth this much amount of money? I was in the hospital. I had to go to the emergency room a couple of years ago. I had some really bad allergic reaction to something. I get to the emergency room. This is how I was treated, with a shot of Benadryl. And I really don't want to tell you just how many hundreds of dollars that shot of Benadryl cost. Now, you know, on the open market, I mean, how much does Benadryl cost in, you know, pill form?
Not
several hundred dollars, but you've got...
$110.
Right, so I mean, so even for things like that, you can say you're actually paying for the cost to maintain a regularly running emergency room, you know, just so that it's there when you need it. Right, so the thing is, so...
Well, you were paying for the diagnosis and figuring out what was wrong. You're also paying for the skill of getting that into your vein.
Right,
and
so...
Well,
the freeloaders gets into the whole coverage issue. But, like, again, let's do a section B here. So, 18, source number 18 is Gemara Bava Kama 85A. This is a case here where if you hit a guy, right, you know, certain things you can say to him. So, let's say I beat someone up, as unlikely or as physically impossible as that can be. If I tell the guy that, you know what, I'll take care of it. You know, I've got a doctor who's going to come, and he's going to stitch you up for free. The guy has a legitimate right to say, any doctor that heals for free is probably worth it, right? With the understanding here, you know, or at least the language here, you know, asya demagen b'magen, magen shavat, you know, the person who heals for nothing, the physician who heals for nothing is worth nothing. So we assume, you know, we don't assume that, you know, just doctors, you know, we don't take doctors for granted. We assume that whatever it is that they do is at least enough of a skill that's worth, you know, some degree of compensation on a level. And here's a, you know, another source from, you know, Gemara Ta'anit 21b that you'll find often cited by proponents of, you know, we have to have universal health care and lower costs, etc., is the instance of this person, Abba, the bloodletter, daily, who it says here, Ile Shama Mimitifta Durakia Kol Yoma. Every day he would get greetings from heaven and lists a lot of things that he did that he was worthy to have, such greetings from heaven. One of the things that he did was he had a box that was placed out in private, and for anyone who wanted to afford, who could afford to pay for his services, put in whatever they could afford. And if there was someone there who couldn't, a scholar who was happened to consult, and not only would he not take money from him, but he would even give money for, you know, the service that, you know, he was doing. Now here, you're basically, you know, this is pay whatever you can afford. You know, this, you know, one that could seem, you know, very common, you know, from each according to his means, you know, just based purely on the honor system. However, as, you know, Yossi mentioned, you know, our medicine today is a lot different than them. Like, yeah, you know, on one hand you could say you know, pay whatever you can afford. On the other hand, your treatment were leeches. And, well, I mean, well, in, you know, for different ways, but like, you know, they weren't dealing with MRIs, right? They didn't have any of that. The knowledge of putting leeches on, I mean, I'm sure involved some degree of intelligence, but, you know, let's face it. What we do today is a lot more intense. You know, and definitely, I think, thank God we've advanced a bit. So on one hand, you see a very good mentality from a doctor who is able to say, you know what, pay whatever you can, and he's credited for this. And it's something which, you know, if you can help someone out, I think the ethic is still there. But it's also important to consider, you know, I guess you get what you pay for, too. Yeah.
No, but it seems to me, and maybe I'm just reading this in, that this is being pictured not as standard, normative, demanded behavior. Mm. This is being presented as saintly behavior.
It is, but yeah, it also should...
There once was a guy in Washington Heights who was like that.
But when you're talking about, I mean, you know, when you're talking about the law, it's not just laws, it's also the laws and the ethics behind the laws. That there does seem to be an ethical component here, you know, if you can help out, you do so to the best of your ability. I don't know of a source where it mandates this lahalacha, but the fact that this guy was extolled for this particular reason shows at least, you know, this you know, could be an ideal that we ought to aspire to as a society. Now, Frida, you were talking about, you know, getting... doctors, you know, getting sort of, you know, shafted here. Please, you know, take the next couple of sources here. This is a Mishnah and Kedushin 82a.
I wasn't talking.
Well, someone mentioned about, you know, doctors getting, you know, sort of shafted, or at least their reputation. And for here you have a Mishnah and Gemara Mishnah and Gemara and Rashi on Kedushin 82a.
Okay.
So take it one step at a time.
Okay. The best of doctors are destined for Gehenna.
Best doctors go to hell. Wow. So read 21. This is Rashi's comment on that.
Okay.
Read the underlined one.
And there are those who have the ability to heal the poor, and they decline.
Right. So one of the reasons why doctors don't have that great of respect is one of the things that they do that's wrong is someone goes up for healing, you know, they're poor, says, you know what, I'm not going to heal you because you're too poor. And for that, now, you know, here's where the ethical thing comes in, too, in terms of, like, the ethics of healthcare. Like, you know, this is not a good thing.
Okay, the thing is, in defense of, and I tend to be much more on the liberal side of this whole discussion, but it's not fair to the doctor. Suppose the doctor gets inundated with poor people,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't have enough rich patients to cover.
Right, so I think it's... I mean, okay, so you can say in terms of, like, which cases, but I think it doesn't say that they do, it says yesh biyado. Like, you could have a time that does come up and this does happen. Mm-hmm. Meaning, I don't know to what extent you're going to force a doctor to do stuff or not, but I think it's, you know, within the realm of plausibility that if you're a top-notch doctor, right, you probably could afford to do, you know, a few more pro bono cases, and you just necessarily turn someone away. So another case, you know, very important in terms of the cost is Shulchan Aruch Yeridea 3363. One of the issues, you know, that comes up in, you know, the contemporary debate is, what do you do with the costs of medicine? So Shulchan Aruch says, "Mi sheyesh lo simanim, if someone has drugs, v'chaveiro chole, v'tzarich lehem, asur lo la'alot bidmeyam yoter min ha-ra'uy." Wonderful halacha here, that if you have drugs and someone else gets sick, you are not allowed to gouge the medicine. And if you want to talk pure economics, supply and demand. If, you know, you've got, you know, I know, poison, and I've got the antidote, my antidote is, you know, I've got the supply, you've got a really good demand, I can charge you a whole lot of money for it. So he says here, it is asur, it is forbidden to charge more than what is ra'ui. I will leave this an open question. What does this word ra'ui mean? What does it mean that it's an appropriate thing in terms of market? I mean, we'll discuss that a little bit more, but leave that right now as an open question. Not only that, Shulchan Aruch continues, Alafilo pasikulo bidmeyam harbe. Let's say they even agree to a higher price. Bidmei tzorecha sha'ah, shelo matzu simanim ela biyado. Because the guy's the only one who supplies it, so he can gouge. And let's say he does gouge and you come to an agreement, ein lo ela demeyan. You only pay back the actual cost of it. That you don't pay that overinflated price.
Extortion.
Yes, this is really extortion here. However, and here's where you have that contradiction with Shulchan Aruch. If you're not talking about the medicine per se, but you're talking about the medical cost of the doctor, chayav litenlo, then you do have to pay higher medical costs. Meaning, if you've got aspirin, I need an aspirin, you're not allowed to charge me more. But if you're a doctor and I need your medical expertise, and you say, well, I'll only do it for $50,000, then, you know, even though the normal going rate is 10, I would still have to pay it, assuming I make that agreement. However, you know, get this reason behind here, shechachmato machar lo ve'en lo damin, because he sold his wisdom. Now, even though Shulchan Aruch said, you know, a few se'ifim earlier that you're not actually selling your wisdom, you know, you're actually selling your time, this is how he interprets it here. And even the Ramah here adds, that even if there's a commandment, that even though there's a commandment to heal him, you don't force a doctor to heal him without getting paid for it, which is, you know, I think also, you know, a very fascinating halacha. And finally, in source number 6 here, which I think is of crucial importance for halacha today, in terms of when you talk about the costs of medicine, a non-trivial cost or malpractice. Liabilities, right? And what does Shulchan Aruch say here? Underlined thing here. Ve'im repay shelo birshut beitin. Let's say he heals without the reshut of beitin, chayav b'tashlumin. Then he has to pay for damages. Afilu im hu baki, even if he is an expert. In the first section of this, the Shulchan Aruch said that you are only allowed to act, perform in medicine if you are an expert and the best in the field. Otherwise, if you kill someone, you're a murderer for negligence. Right? But let's say you're in this category of birshut beitin. You are, I'll use this idiom, intentionally licensed by beitin to function as a doctor. Then if you are not, then even if you are an expert, you have to pay for any damages. Ve'im ripei birshut beitin. But if you healed under the aegis of beitin with that license from the court, v'tah v'hizik, and you made a mistake and you caused damage, patur midinei adam v'chayav bidinei shemayim. You are exempt from the courts on the ground, but you are obligated in the laws of heaven. Ve'im hemit, and if he died, v'nodalo shishagag, and you know that he made a mistake, in this case, let's say, a real medical error that you did that led to his death, gola al yado. Then you go into galut. I don't want to get into the medical issue in terms of how do we know if the guy died because of you or not because of you. But according to this, right, we have, and this gets into the communal issue, that it's not just a doctor, but there's also a status of a doctor that does it, birshut beit din, as an agent of the court. Based on Mishnah Bechorot, that if you are considered, if you are certified by a Beit Din as an expert, and in Mishnah Bechorot 4.4 discusses about, like, you know, certain laws regarding animals, biology, once you have that license, then you are exempt from liability. That's even if you make a mistake, because you're doing so, it's one of the protections you have. Now, don't get me wrong, this doesn't mean that doctors can just do whatever you want. Shulchan Aruch also says that if a doctor is found to have made a mistake, Beit Din can yank his license, and then he's, you know, back to square one. But when you talk about lowering the cost of medical care in the halachic system, yes, doctors shouldn't charge a lot of money, and yes, we'd like people to get care, But on the other hand, we have no malpractice. And think about, yeah, I mean, I actually tried to get numbers for this. I didn't find, you know, anything set about, one second.
I just punish differently.
Well, you can't.
Punish the galut.
Well, that's if he dies because of an error.
Okay.
That's specifically death. But, like, if it's not death, right? Malpractice insurance. I did a search online earlier today. It can easily get into the six figures a year. And when you look at doctors today, they're already coming out of med school, like $250,000 in hot, give or take. And then we're also going to say it's going to cost you even more to be a doctor because, you know, we're going to make you pay malpractice because we want the right to sue. Then don't be so surprised when your medical costs are that high. In fact, in the recent book Nudge, two University of Chicago economists, Thaler and Sunstein, argue that one way to lower medical costs is give people the ability to opt out from malpractice, meaning you give up the right to sue in return for lower medical costs. You know, I don't.
You're not yanking the liability. You're just exchanging. You're saying, okay, doctors, here's the deal. No more. You don't have to pay medical malpractice anymore. But if you kill somebody by mistake, you're going to go to jail, the equivalent of jail, for, you know, whatever the life of the coin will be, let's say 10 years, with a 10% chance that the victim's brother is going to kill you on the way.
Right.
That's serious.
Yeah. So I don't know the exact ramifications here in terms of the galut by it, because, I mean, think about it. You don't want to, if you really want to have, like, top-quality doctors, you can't get in their way of doing so or make it difficult. Otherwise, what you wind up having is a situation like Israel, which is one of the socialized places, but last year, as was reported in the newspapers, they were offering $60,000 for doctors to make aliyah because they had a doctor shortage. Why? Because it's a really tough job to do. If it doesn't pay that well, and you're going to be on the hook for liability after taking out loans, who in their right mind is going to do it? And I think that's a very important point, because when we talk about policies, about, you know, what's going to be better, and, you know, this is something economists like, you know, to do, you know, from religious terms we call this Izu Chacham Haroat Tanolad. You need to think about the consequences of your actions. And if by doing certain consequences you're going to make it impossible for doctors to practice their craft, you're going to have a shortage of doctors, and ultimately people are going to be worse off. It's going to be less or worse medical care for more people, and you're effectively be making an exchange of, we're going to give, you know, people who have nothing are going to get a little bit more than nothing, but the people who have more are going to have to deal with less. As we saw in section one, that seems, in my opinion, to go against the halachic ethic that we have in, you know, in the Torah. So again, let me conclude by saying, you know, repeating what I said at the beginning. I'm not saying you should or should not endorse any position or any political policy by any guy who's in Congress, at least not on halachic grounds. We can debate it later. The major issue that I want to try to bring across is not to frame it necessarily in religious terms, to say that as a matter of the Jewish religion, we ought to support this plan, or as a Jewish religion, we ought to support another plan. Because they're not looking at the Torah to have their sense of medical ethics. I personally think that what's in Torah is very ethical and does a very good job of balancing the chesed for other people with the real needs of others and the logistics behind it and the finances. You know, so if you want to support it, fine, you don't, but, you know, Torah's Torah, politics are politics. Keep those two separate. So, up for any questions people have? The doctor. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea how this would even work today in terms of...
I mean, not even today, you know. What did the Mechaber have in mind here?
Well, it wasn't really... It was before the Mechaber. The source for this is actually Tosefta and Makot.
Okay.
You know, that was the basis for it.
No, but what's the shot?
Oh, in terms of, like, how this is actually going to work,
no,
right?
Like, who exiles him? He knows, does he exile himself?
Oh, yeah.
Or does he say, hey, by the way, I messed up. I'm going to look, I messed up.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
There are other people there. I mean, very rarely.
Yeah, but just because other people there don't necessarily... I mean, you've been in surgeries, Jesse. Not everyone knows who made up or how they made a mistake, per se. Like, it's possible, I would think. And
okay,
please correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, there's a
if
pretty
I'm
good
sur-
indicator. There very often there's a...
All right.
I mean, there are times when you can't see in and you can't see what happened. But there are times when you hear...
But
then the doctor, oh,
But right, it's exactly those times that you don't see what happened. Like, you don't know if it's something that you did that was a mistake or if it was someone else. I admit, I honestly don't.
And it says, Gola al Yado. So it seems like the. So Yado refers to the doctor again.
I would.
So it seems like, you know.
He would have to pick himself up in.
Right?
Well, I don't. It's not a.
I don't know about the voluntary thing, but.
So like it's on the honor system?
I don't know.
I honestly, we haven't had like gullet, you know, in terms of for an ear miklat in a long time. So this is something where I honestly don't know how this is going to work. You know, I didn't see elaboration in the Talmud. It's possible I missed it. You know, the source is a Tosefta, which is a Mishnaic era source, and yeah. Well, please look if you find more on like how exactly this thing works, I'd love to hear it. You know, because I find it fascinating too in terms of, you know, this is a risk that we're going to expect a doctor to take. You know, minimum at least the financial penalty isn't going to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be fair to say something along the lines of think that halakha would urge us to have something that provides. Whatever say an amount of coverage, but has to have a certain degree of protection for the public resources.
You mean, well, it seemed to be from like the first section. I mean, if you combine like what is the role of, you know, the Rofe? The Rofe is a communal institution that's under the auspices of the Beit Din. And the way that he's paid isn't like a regular employee for services, but rather for his time. So those would seem to indicate that, you know, he's more of a public utility in its own right, which ostensibly would have to be supported in some way by the community. But again, also, you know, how much does it mean to support, you know, a doctor is another question.
And not for people who are sick because it's their own fault, and not when it's going to bankrupt.
Well, I mean, again, you've got the communal level versus, you know, if you want to say, like, we as a community are going to get together and do stuff fine, but if you want to say that I've got some religious ethic that, you know, I've got to, you know, take care of some other guy, it's a little bit different there. You know, if a community as a whole decides to get together, in theory, they can make up their own rules. Yeah.
More recent or contemporary posts can address this, and then that's, you know, this didn't really focus on that, so
the point here, I mean, I could not really be exhaustive. So the main, I mean, I wanted to go to as primary sources as I could, if nothing else to illustrate that it's going to be a lot more complicated to make the statement, you know, this position is following halacha, this position isn't. I'm sure in any one of these topics you can find a lot, I mean, there are out there for different things, you know, in terms of, you know, how the healthcare system works. But that's why we need to be a little bit more careful in terms of, you know, the use of religious rhetoric in political discussions. You know, so that much, I think, you know, there's enough variation just even in, you know, these couple of sheets to have that. Halacha l'masa? And yeah, I mean, you know, we can debate this on end.
I'm a little confused. I still got the opposite. From what I got from this is that if a person wanted to say, no, you should support the democratic plan because there are many sources in Judaism that believe it's a good thing, you can hang your head on that. So anyone say you need to oppose the system because there's many sources that say you shouldn't support
it.
You can hang your head on that too.
Well, part of it's a lot. So if you're hanging on a boat, I mean, there's a difference between, like, you know, how one person, you know, hangs their hat. Like, if I say I'm going to support it, fine, you know what, that's on me. If I want to tell someone else to support it, then, you know, in the name of Torah, then I can only...
bring your sources.
But it's not just bringing the sources. But if I want to say that, the most recent bill, that I as a Jew have a religious mandate to support the current democratic bill, because that's what the Torah says, I can't do that as a Shomer Torah without ignoring contradictory sources. And that's not honest. And I think it's a misrepresentation of the Torah's ethical system here. Because it's not, you know, my understanding of the Torah's ethical system is not helping out one group at the expense of the other. It's how do you help out interested parties. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to be able to do it in the same size or scope. But, you know, you don't want to save one person's life at the direct expense of, you know, risking someone else's either. So, you know, that was more of like along the lines of the, you know, how I was trying to bring this up, especially, you know, given how heated the debate is of, you know, healthcare here. And, you know, things get even more heated when you start bringing God into it. You know, so if you want to argue about healthcare plans, you know, you can have, I mean, look, I'm not objecting to having, you know, Torah informing your decision, but there's a difference between Torah informing your decision and, you know, starting to say, if, you know, you don't support, you know, this particular plan, you're somehow a negligent Jew, or you're not as good of a Jew as you can be, you're just ignoring stuff, right? I mean, you could say that if you in turn ignored other parts, but, you know, lo tigra and lo tosif go hand in hand. You know, you can't add, can't subtract. You know, take as much of the Torah as you can and then try to put it together and see, you know, kind of, you know, what haze you're left with. So I think that's it. Thank you all very much for coming out. Well, tonight, I'd like to thank Lisa Kellerman. And